Hi, my name's Monty Rowland. I'm with Monty Design in Morrisville, North Carolina. We provide product development, mechanical engineering, and industrial design prototyping services. And we have the opportunity to work with a lot of different companies in a lot of different industries. I want to spend a few minutes talking about understanding your customer. And there could probably be thousands and thousands of podcasts done on this subject. But what I want to do today, instead of talking in generic terms, is to talk in very specific terms. Your customer or your client is part of a single entity in a microcosm. Because you got to sell one product at a time, generally. It's important to design a product for one person. Now, at this point, everybody's recoiling, and those of y'all who do house of quality studies and other things are going, wait a minute. We don't really design products for one person. We design products for a group of people and try to find the best fit. And that's true, too. I would argue, though, that in order to find the best fit, it's important to design a product that works for one person a whole bunch of times. Now, we spent some time talking in another podcast about personalities and personas. And this time what I'd like to do instead is to take a single market space, one that many of y'all may not even be familiar with, and kind of analyze it and walk through it. If you've watched the show American Preppers on National Geographic, or you've watched some of these videos on the internet, there's a lot of people that are concerned with what could happen on a national scale. Now, so let's back up and let's talk about some history. 12 years ago, we had the Y2K scare. And that was the point, that was the concern, that because all these computers were designed without an accommodation for a year past 1999, the computer systems would fail, that the U.S. might be plunged into turmoil, and that the society of fabric might unwind. Well, it turned out that the banks were already on top of this, the government was mostly on top of it, and when the clock ticked over, there wasn't a big mass failure. And a lot of that was due to the fact that it was recognized as a problem, and people who had infrastructure level equipment and other levels, and they ended up fixing the problem before it became a nightmare. So we had, though, a group of people who were concerned about that and basically headed to the woods so they could survive. And they got pinned with this label called survivalists. And after a few movies and TV shows, the whole survivalist movement at the time, which was pretty limited, was pegged as some crazy war vet with an M16 who, instead of taking his kids to the dentist, taught them how to field strip their guns and didn't educate them in anything but fighting and survival in the woods. And it was very unfortunate that a group of people got labeled with that. And I'm sure there are some people. There's always people that are outside of the mainstream norm. But over the last few years, there's been I'm going to call it a self-reliance movement. And when you think about preppers, which, and everybody's heard the term in one way or another, it's not a well-understood term in my mind by the general population. So let's take that term. When you hear preppers, you see videos, you see people putting away food, water, ammunition, what have you. And if you were asked to design a product for that market without understanding that market, there's a good chance that your product might be really, really off the mark. So let's take and let's look at this market space. Where does this market space live? What's the breadth of the market space? And who are the people in there? Well, when you think about self-reliance, it's not just the fact that the government might collapse or might go into tyranny or the liberals might take over or that the Republicans might lose their mind or what have you. I think instead it's better to look at that in a broader context. The broader context would be, what would you do if you had 2 feet of snow in an area that wasn't equipped to deal with it? Hey, like Raleigh. In Raleigh, we had 2 feet of snow, and it shut everything down for at least a week. People didn't go to work. And thankfully, there wasn't a lot. There weren't a lot. I don't know if there were any deaths attributed to loss of infrastructure. I think there may have been some deaths that were secondary effects of that. The power is off, somebody has a fire in their fireplace, the house caught on fire type things. But there wasn't a failure of society or anything like that. However, if you lived somewhere that you couldn't walk to assistance or to the grocery store, assuming the grocery store was open, or if the employees couldn't get to the grocery store to open it, then let's say you lived out in the country and your power's off. Well, if you use a heat pump to heat and your power's off, you're cold. So buying a kerosene heater and putting away a few gallons of kerosene in your garage could be something that was good for your family at that point. A good example was some friends of mine during an ice storm a few years later had a kid that was sick. And so their power went off. Well, there was the roads were icy and they didn't know when the power was going to come back on. And so what I did was to take them my kerosene heater. At the time, I was a bachelor, and I lived in a basement condo, and I had a fireplace, and I was doing just fine without the heater. And so they needed a heater. Now, and I'm not trying to brag about what I did for that family, but which was friends of mine, and I didn't do any big thing, just loaned them a heater. But it did make things a lot more comfortable for everybody. Because now they had a way to heat a portion of their home. So had this family bought a kerosene heater in advance, had a little bit of fuel over the winter, they would have had a degree of self-reliance they didn't have before. So I think when you look at the modern prepper movement, it's really not about paranoia and guns. It's really driven by a desire to have a higher level of self-reliance and the ability to provide some of your own security and not have to rely on the police. So that self-reliance can take a lot of different forms. One is to have enough food to help you survive for a period where you might not be able to get any. And there again, in Raleigh, you know, which isn't on the coast, isn't in the mountains, we've still had some pretty major weather events. We've had a hurricane that really disrupted everything for days and days. Some people didn't get power back for weeks. We've had snowstorms. We've had ice storms. You know, a recent example is Hurricane Sandy. Hurricane Sandy, we had folks that had anywhere from 7 to 4 days warning that it was going to hit where they lived. Yet, they were unprepared. So, you have on the news, on an hourly basis, people being told that their, you know, where they live, let's say Staten Island, for example, is going to get pummeled by a hurricane. And so, in that area, there were many people who were on the news who were talking about how the government needed to come help them. Well, now I'm a Southern Appalachian, so I have a bias here against the government helping. I believe that as a people, we should have a level of self-reliance. But these people were not prepared. There was tens of thousands, if not millions of people who knew they were going to be impacted by a major weather event who did almost nothing in preparation, that, you know, were waiting for someone else to come help them. All right. So, and hey, if you place your faith in the government and you're comfortable with that, then this may not resonate well with you. Or you place your faith in your neighbors or the fact that there'll always be a ready food supply, then you may have a hard time getting your arms around this. Now, what I'm not trying to do is evangelize you to go out and buy a bunch of food. What I am trying to do is to provide you with a perspective. Perspective that some designers and some engineers may have a hard time grasping. And the reason why I want to run this by you in this way is so that I can challenge what you believe and help put you in a situation where you say, if I had to design a product for this market, how would I do that? Because I don't believe what the people who might buy the product believe. So this could be a problem for a designer, but I think as designers, one of the key things, and engineers, is that we have to be able to have an emotional disconnect, professional disconnect from what we're doing, to where we have enough of an emotional connection and enough of a vision catching that we can grab a vision and hold on to it long enough to design a product, even if it's not a vision we understand or agree with. So take a minute. If you have to, turn the podcast off for a second, come back, go, wow, Monty's this crazy Southern Appalachian. And that may be, but it's a good podcast. So, all right. So we got people who weren't prepared. Now, on the other hand, you had a lot of people who were prepared, had generators, had food, had water. And so those people were prepared for what occurred as much as they could be. Now, there's different levels of preparation. Depends on what someone feels is necessary. So one of the things you got to sit back and say, wow, does everybody buy 3 months of food, 3 months of water, 2,000 rounds of ammo, and 900 rolls of toilet paper? The answer is no. Because being people, just as we just talked about, that as Hurricane Sandy showed, different levels of preparation for something that a group of people knew was going to devastate their area. It's the same way in times of, we'll call it comfort. Instead of peace and war, we'll say comfort. Comfort and then destruction. So the hurricane left a wave of destruction, and there were different levels of preparation. The same thing occurs if you're designing a product for the prepper market. You have people who put a good bit of their annual revenue and a good bit of their time into being prepared. Some of these people aren't preppers. A good example, or at least preppers per se, a good example is canned goods. There's a lot of people in different areas of the country who can. Now, most of y'all know what a mason jar is. And when you start talking about canning, there's two different types of canning. One type of canning is that where you put a metal lid with a rubber ring on top of a mason jar, and then you heat it to a temperature with food in it, and that seals that food in there and protects it for years. Another type that everybody's even more familiar with is a can in a grocery store. So a can in a grocery store is a steel tin type can, lasts for a very long time. Is a great way to store food for a long time. A generation ago, awful lot of people canned. What that meant was that when there was plenty of an agricultural product, let's say beans. What people would do is to go buy beans at a very low cost, take some mason jars, break the beans up, cut them up, put them in a mason jar, and can them. And then turn around and put those on the shelf. Canned goods can last 3, 4, 5, 10 years, depending on what the food is and the temperature it's stored at. So there's a lot of people who, especially in areas that are more remote or more country, who already can. Some of them can because that's the way they afford to eat. So for example, when food's inexpensive, then you buy a whole bunch of it. So let's say a beans just came in. I can go to the farmer's market. I can buy a bushel for $10. Well, I might be able to get, 30, 40 meals for $10, which is cheap. And then there's people who have started canning because they're concerned about having a backup food supply in case for some reason it's disrupted. So I think the important thing here is that you have this continuum of people who can because that's what they've always done, and that's how they have food for the winter. Maybe they have seasonal work. Maybe it's just a way they save money. And then there's people who have started canning because, hey, this is a great way to preserve food and something that if I had to eat out of a jar, it wouldn't be all that bad versus dried food or something like that. So already we have this one issue to can or not to can, and that one issue has driven your understanding, I think, of the market space. And also, that brings up a lot of questions when you start thinking about, well, I'm designing a product for this market. And you could apply this similar level of analysis as far as building a continuum. You know, why buy or store such and such? You know, why store toilet paper? You know, how many rolls of toilet paper does someone store? And the motivations behind those decisions may help you design a better product for, let's say, the storage of toilet paper. Another good example like that is ammunition. On one end of the spectrum, you have people who have a lot of ammo because they shoot competitively. I have friends who probably keep 10 to 20,000 rounds of ammo in their home. Because they go out on a weekend, they go to a competition, they put 1,000 rounds downrange. So at that point, you know, you have a 3-day competition, you might be down several thousand rounds, and you need to store enough so that you can shoot and you're not having to constantly reload. On the other hand, you have people who store ammo just for the purpose of having it in case they need it, and their shooting is a way of maintaining their preparation for providing their own security. So the motivations of these two people may be very different. You know, on one hand, we've got someone who shoots as a hobby, and another, on the other hand, we could have one whose primary motivation for shooting is just to be able to be self-reliant and being able to provide some of their own security. So already, I hope that it's becoming more obvious that there's a lot of prejudices that we all have. We all have our experiences, our viewpoints, and we bring those to the table when we design a new product, and that's wonderful. I guess what I'm encouraging here is to go after that flexibility where we can pick up someone else's vision, think it through, and in doing that, having a better understanding of what product we should design, how that product should function, and what's the motivation of the customer who would purchase that product. In doing that, we now have kind of a framework of, you know, looking at each different issue within a market space that we're addressing and driving our new product development through that approach. I hope this helps. Like I said, I wanted to bring up a market space that not everyone is familiar with, Some of y'all may be uncomfortable with it. And that's good, because I think that really helps us as designers to have a dialogue, even though I guess this is just a monologue, but you're welcome to write me or email me to make it a dialogue. And because we have to be able to expand and grow our buffet of what we can accommodate. Whether or not we agree with it or not, it sometimes doesn't even matter. I mean, obviously, if you have a moral quandary about something, don't design it. You know, we've had products we turned down because I wasn't going to put my name on them. But that's different. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about here is that sometimes there are different views on, you know, life, what's important, what are priorities. And being able to be flexible and accommodate those different views, I think, makes you a better designer, engineer, what have you. I hope this is a beneficial podcast, and I hope that y'all have a great day. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to give me a call. 1-800-722-7987. Again, this is Monty. Or send me an email, Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E.com. And if you have a project that you need some help on, you need us to help design it, help engineer it, help us to find manufacturers, help you roll the product out with the initial PR, or just take your product concept and turn it into a prototype, let us know. We do all that. We do a good job. And we would love to earn your business and have your business. I hope that this was helpful. Have a great day. Monty Rowland, signing off.